Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the movie Capricorn 1, 1977, conspiracy theory movie. It's just the two of us tonight, since Drew's on his monthly sabbatical. Brother Jay, had you seen this movie before?
Never, ever, ever before.
And what did you think of the 1977? It is really a 70s movie for sure.
So here's my problem. Get this all right out up front. I have a hard time separating if I should judge it as I just saw it, or if I should judge it as if I had seen it in 1977.
So, no, judge it now.
Well, I'll answer both. I think had I seen this in 77, it would have been a better movie. I think watching it now, it was pretty camp. And it was bad. It wasn't good.
You didn't like it?
I didn't say I didn't like it. I didn't hate it. It was just bad. So, I mean, there were some great parts. Telly Savalas, for one, was hilarious. Pervert. So... there were some odd choices. I don't think O.J. Simpson has ever been a good actor, but, you know, he took a stab at it. So
the director, by the way, Peter Himes, who directed The Star Chamber, 2010, Running Scared, The Presidio, Time Cop, The Relic, and End of Days. He actually, during the 70s, he directed both O.J. Simpson in Capricorn 1 and Robert Blake in Busting.
Oh, did he ever have any interactions with Phil Spector?
No, I don't think so.
It would be like the trifecta.
Yeah, but when asked about this movie, he said that, you know, O.J. Simpson was a demand from the studio. And he said his response was, okay. And when they asked how it went, he was fine. Could have been worse.
Because he had like five lines.
Yeah, he didn't have any lines. He's not an actor. I think he probably got better, maybe. He certainly acted innocent one time putting on some gloves, but they didn't extend his the part too far out of his reach. Although I think during the end of it, when he's walking through the desert and is collapsing from exhaustion, they actually like had him wear like pants with like metal braces on them and have him walk around for a while. So he was really tired. So method acting.
Okay.
I like this movie. I think it's cheesy fun. And of course, I like it because it's part of that 70s conspiracy movie theme. Parallax View.
I got it. Picked up where you're going with that. Boyfriend Jesse was absolutely agog because there was a Datsun in it. So he was like, it's a classic car.
Did he like the movie?
He didn't stick around for the movie because he thought it was pretty bad. But I didn't hate this movie. I didn't think it was awful. It was not a great movie. It was camp. But to me, I think this was trying to be a serious movie, but watching it now makes it almost as if it were a parody.
A little bit. I could definitely see that.
So I think that's the disconnect. Had it been 77 and, you know, faked the moon landings and what's-his-face hadn't... slugged the reporter in the head or the face, you know, all those things. So it's hard to divorce yourself from that. But I understand it was just some weird plot choices they made. So
I see. It's funny. The problems I had with it, and we'll get there, had to do with the unevenness of the acting in the movie. Mm-hmm. And from otherwise good actors, for the most part, there's just some wildly different acting.
But you're judging them on their heretofore 77 experiences in acting, or you're judging them on today's experiences? You mean
like now they have 40 more years of practice?
Right.
Sure.
Sam Waterston, great guy. It's like a billion years of Law and Order, right? So we're used to seeing him all pent up and then Oigavolt or whatever you want to go with that.
But I found him really charming in this movie.
Yeah, no, it was good. Hal Holbrook was a little unhinged. His performance was uneven.
I saw Hal Holbrook as being just reliable. You know, I mean, I've seen Hal Holbrook in everything. He's just a reliable actor.
But I've seen him perform so much better, i.e. All the President's Men.
Sure. Yeah, there's that. Also, Elliot Gould. Elliot Gould was weird. It looked like he was reading off of cue cards at a certain point. Like his relationship and his conversations with Brenda Vaccaro.
I want to say that's the cocaines.
Maybe, yeah. Because he was really stilted talking to Brenda Vaccaro twice. As if he was having his lines translated from another language. It was really unnatural.
I'm hit and miss with Elliot Gould. Sometimes I see him in things and think he's good. And then there's a movie where I think he played a bank robber that went bad. And I vaguely remember. I only remember bits and pieces, so I can't imagine it was all that good a movie. But
hey, first tangent, just a couple minutes in. And this one's straight. It's from Rebecca Booth from the United Nations of Horror. She posted on the United Nations of Horror this thing, not for me, but it was almost written for all of us. There's a podcast where Michael Caine talks about famous heists.
Oh, I'd be down for that.
Yeah, me too, except it's only available in the UK right now. So it's kind of frustrating. But it's like, oh, that has Drew written all over it.
I can help you get around that.
Okay, well, yeah, let me know. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, if you can heist me up a copy of that podcast, that would be great. It may be through Audible, though, so I don't know if that changes things. I'm sure it'll eventually be here.
I think my other problem with this movie was the score. The music was just...
See, I love the score.
Oh, man.
It was that John Carpenter 70s score.
Eyes Wide Shut piano.
No. I think it was of a time, for sure. Because I'm going to be somebody inserting part of the score here, because just the opening score gives me that 70s feel. It's like I can smell the Naga Hide couch.
And I wrote, the black movie open was probably helpful in the days before movie theaters added 10 minutes of previews.
Well, yeah.
Because there was nothing but black in graphics, right? Which I guess, you know, you have 4 or 5 minutes of that, so you get people in their asses in their seats, so.
So let's talk about the movie, if you don't mind. And after we talk about the movie, I want to talk about conspiracies a little bit.
Okay.
And then I suspect you have a story to tell. So,
do I?
So Capricorn 1, 1977. In the nutshell of this movie, here's the entire plot. You probably already know, if you know anything about movies, you probably already know kind of what the plot is. So I'm not really giving anything away in a 43-year-old movie. But the idea is a manned mission to Mars is faked, and then the crew members that were supposed to be on that mission end up having to escape because they know they're going to be killed. And by the way, NASA agreed to all of this technical support and assistance. Like, they loaned them the lunar module. They provided all that footage and everything. That was all directly from NASA, even though they're technically the villains in this movie.
Huh, that's an odd choice. I wonder if that was a way to drum up interest and talk about because there was some very heavy-handed commentary on how the space program didn't get the funding and recognition it deserved.
Oh, yeah.
So that may have been why, because even though they were the villain, only parts of them were the villain.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and the conceit of the movie, still, I think the conceit of the movie makes it, like, the sinister part doesn't happen until a little bit later. But the beginning of it, I think, is a great setup. You've got three astronauts who they're being launched off of the Apollo type rockets, but they're being sent to Mars, right? The first manned mission to Mars. So the astronauts, it's all very cool. And through these three crew members who are Charles Brubaker, Brew, played by James Brolin, who's goddamn magnetic, and Peter Willis, Sam Waterston, who is also goddamn magnetic, and then John Walker, played by Orenthal James Simpson, who is present. And they are getting into the capsule, and they're about to be launched to Mars. And just as they're done the final countdown, they're actually whisked out of the command module and taken to an undisclosed location, and the rocket launches without them. And it is explained to them by a NASA official in charge of the thing, James Kellaway, who's Hal Holbrook, that, well, the contractor for the life support system wasn't able to give them a life support system that would actually work, but they couldn't scrub the mission because America's interest in the space program had already kind of waned. They use a thing like, you know, everybody in the world watched Apollo 11 land. But by the time you get to like Apollo, like 16, 17 or whatever.
Yeah. No one cared.
And people were upset about interrupting their programming of I Love Lucy reruns.
You say that Hal Holbrook's character came in and told them what was going on, but that was quite a few minutes apart from when they were pulled out, because there was there was a lot of this movie that didn't need to be. There was no point in the massive exposition. I think this was just I think this is just 70s movies, maybe. This just there was no brevity, but they go to the trouble of taking them out of the capsule. They walk them back down. They put them on a shuttle. They put them on a plane. They fly them. They have conversations in the plane. Then they put them in this facility. And then Hal Holbrook comes in. And that's not a few minutes of time. That's a good.
Yeah, they don't know what's going on.
Right. And so there's that. And I think Hal Holbrook, he made the president the villain.
Yes.
Because he said the president already told him if they had one more failure, like, he was done. He already didn't support it. And so they couldn't afford any more screw ups. And but surprise.
So Hal Holbrook's bright idea is at this other location, which is turns out to be a decommissioned military base out in the desert. They have a separate a control system where they are feeding information from the astronauts as if they are aboard the aircraft, and telemetry from the astronauts, and video. So what happens is, the rocket goes to Mars, and they need this moment on TV. They've had this whole soundstage built with the lunar lander or the Mars lander or whatever. And they need to get these guys acting like astronauts. And they're going to use some camera tricks for 1977. I'm sure were very cool. But just, if you just imagine what you could do now with Photoshop and deep fakes and stuff. The whole, I think the kernel of this movie, Peter Himes, who wrote it, I believe, and also directed it, the kernel was, so we had this this space mission to the moon, and except for 12 people or 10 people, there's no witnesses. It's all just video that you have, and since you can manipulate video, video can be presented in a different fashion than reality. What if there was a big conspiracy? So the idea was just to keep their funding. These guys are going to play their part, and then there's this whole thing where they intentionally program the rocket on its way back to deposit them a couple hundred miles away from where they're supposed to land in the ocean, so that the aircraft carrier that's going to scoop them up has to go for a couple hours to get to them, and at which point they can just deposit these guys back in the capsule, and then they can come out of the capsule and return heroes. Nobody's the wiser. They get funded. They get to go on a real mission at some point. It's all great. They just have to play along.
Did you mention the fact that Hal Holbrook said that the reason they couldn't go on the mission is because their life support would fail?
Well, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's the whole thing, is the life support system didn't work. So, I mean, it could have been worse, I guess. They could have faked the whole thing and let these guys die in there. But no, they were at least trying. It's like a slow conspiracy. It's like, okay, it's a big conspiracy as far as they're actually, like, you know, basically like falsifying government records or whatever.
They're committing full-on fraud.
Oh, yeah, total fraud. But it's not like a murder conspiracy yet. So you have the tension between these three astronauts, you know, who are, you know, especially the crew chief, Brew, James Brolin. He can't look his kids in the eye and lie to them about going to Mars. His kids are proud of him. You know, he's a pioneer, a hero for America, whatever. How can you do this? And the other guys are, you know, I mean, they agree, but they're like, well, what else are you going to do? Like, we work for NASA, you know, what's the alternative?
Yeah, it beats getting a desk job somewhere.
Well, and also everybody's out of work if they cancel all the space missions, right?
Ostensibly.
And that was Hal Holbrook's selling point, was you have to do this, you know, for NASA, for America, for science, whatever. But Brew doesn't have to like it.
No. But,
oh, and also, they also basically threaten their families, too. They said, if that doesn't convince you, all of your families are being flown on one plane back home. So,
that's like, nice and sinister.
What do you mean? You know, what are you saying? I don't have to say out loud what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying. Yeah, so they basically have to hang out at this downstage, and they have to record this fake landing, and they have to record some messages back home. But there's a little problems, these little cracks around the edge with this whole thing.
Well, but before this, aren't we introduced to Elliot Gould's character?
Kind of. I mean, he's a journalist. Elliot Gould is a journalist.
Allegedly.
Yeah, and he's there, you know, covering the whole space thing. And, you know, we had a fun scene at the launch where the congressman is talking to the vice president. They both don't like each other. And that was kind of fun.
My wife needs a pair of binoculars, too.
Exactly. You are going to go get those. But, sir, you are going to go get those, aren't you? Well, of course.
I did have to laugh that the name was Con Amalgamate.
Yeah, it's
so make a big corp.
Exactly. But then we get this technician named named Elliot Whittier, or Whitter, rather, played by Robert Walden. And was Robert Walden in, like, Lou Grant? Is that where I know him from? He's been in a bunch of stuff.
You're right. He's been in a ton of stuff. Yeah. I don't know. You may be right.
He's great. He was a friendly face to see.
He was in a ton of stuff. He was ever present in the 70s, was he not?
Yeah. 70s, early 80s. Probably was on a lot of TV. I bet you he was on, Disney Sunday movies and that kind of stuff. Made an appearance on Kojak or Columbo or something. But I think he was a cast regular, though, on Lou Grant, a serious show that was a spinoff from the Mary Tyler Moore show, which was a comedy show.
Robert Walden. Oh, he was on The Nanny.
Okay.
I think that's what that is. I don't know. It's a trailer with Fran Drescher. I just assumed it was The Nanny. I could be wrong. Yeah, Lou Grant. 77 to 82. Laverne and Shirley. Love Boat. The Street. Oh, he was on many episodes. Here's where The Streets of San Francisco.
Oh, yes. Douglas. Carl Malden.
That's where I remember him from. Because I was never real big Lou Grant, but Streets of San Francisco I definitely watched plenty of, and you can make your own commentary from there.
It's not that kind of show, man.
Funny you say that. In 1972, he plays in Everything You Always Wanted to Know About Sex But Were Afraid to Ask. He was Sperm.
Sweet.
This is such a strange reality sometimes.
He's one of those New York actors.
He was in Chips. So he did a lot of episodic stuff. Matlock, Perry Mason, the new Mike Hammer. Is that right?
Was that Stacy Geach?
I don't know. Murder, She Wrote. Yeah, so he did a lot of episodic stuff. He was in the Brothers TV series for 5 years. I don't remember Brothers.
Don't know. Yeah, so he was a, you know, he was a yeoman soldier in the actor's army. Anyway, he's just a control operator, a ground control technician guy. And he notices something weird. So he goes to his boss and says, hey, I don't know if there's something wrong with my terminal or something, but the video feed and the telemetry from the satellite are coming, or from the ship, are coming way apart, almost as if they're being broadcast from a different location.
Dun, dun, dun.
Like, well, what console are you on? Ah, 39. Oh, yes, of course, 39. We've always had problems with that.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, that is weird. Well, so Elliot, the NASA guy, happens to be super good friends with journalist Robert Caulfield, Elliot Gould, who I guess he's a sleazy guy. It's so weird because he doesn't get any time to be Elliot Gould. Instead, he and Karen Black, who I'm growing to appreciate Karen Black a lot more as I age. She's funny and really good. But if you have a chance, see Trilogy of Terror. I think it's on Amazon Prime. It's a TV horror movie. It's like in three little segments, the last of which you would totally recognize. It's kind of actually frightening. Anyway, see, she's so good. So Karen Black is also a journalist. And they have this whole, like, witty repartee involving jumping each other, which I thought was a funny 70s term.
Well, because like, he keeps trying, and she's like, you know, your game is so weak, that's not going to work on me. You know what would work? What would work on me is if you did this, and then he doesn't. She's like, yeah, still no.
You wait. After a while, you won't know what city you're in. I defy anyone to tell me the difference between the Holiday Inn in Houston and the Holiday Inn in Cincinnati. The rooms are the same, the music in the elevators is the same, even the ladies with too much makeup in the coffee shop are the same. You never know where you are until after breakfast when you read the paper.
I don't mind it.
Well, I don't mind it that much either. It's just that I would like it all to be with someone I care for, someone I could share it with.
Bullshit.
You're so damn cynical.
I'm not cynical. It's just that your act could use a little polish.
What do you mean by that?
Well, Liz Haller, for starters, it was the California primary. I believe you used the one about both of you being witnesses to the unfolding of history. You have to admit that's a little better than soap wrappers.
You think all I want to do is jump you?
Yes.
You would know sincerity if it ran over you.
Not if you were driving it.
I'm glad I'm not like you.
I have better legs.
Okay, I give up.
Don't give up so easily. Just change your approach.
What approach would you like?
How about something like... I would like to jump you.
Think that would work?
Stands a better chance than wanting to share a meaningful life together.
I would like to jump you.
Go jump yourself.
So she surely shut him down. But this is so funny because I remember like in elementary school, like hearing that so-and-so wants to jump so-and-so else. But now that's not a thing anymore.
Jump your bones.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that was it's a 70s term. Favor.
Yeah.
Well.
Nostalgia.
It's because you know they don't have that candy anymore in the coffin where you have all the bones. So
there you go.
See the '70s, it ruined everybody.
Everything comes back though. So Elliot Gould ends up talking to his buddy. Robert is Elliot Gould. Actually, we'll just call him Elliot Gould. Elliot Gould talks to Robert Walden, and Robert Walden says, "Hey, something's weird with this whole mission thing." But then Elliot says again, like again, he sort of points this out. And it's funny. So Elliot Witter, the character, is played by Robert Walden, but Robert Caulfield, the character, is played by Elliot Gould. So I'm getting the names all mixed up.
Yeah, it was. Yes, it was.
But it's okay because Robert Walden's character is going to disappear. Yeah, he actually he's like, hey, this is weird too many times. Yeah. So they basically deadlined his terminal, wrapped it all in plastic and stuff. And also, they disappeared him, because Elliot Gould goes to his apartment to look for him, and it's sort of weird, because these days, because everybody has a cell phone, probably, he would have probably been shot right there on the porch, but he certainly, you know, he forced his way into this woman's apartment and started, like, flipping through her magazines on her coffee table. And she's like, see, get out of my place. And he's like, no, I have more to say. In a very stilted way, as if I'm reading off of cue cards, or maybe the words are written on the backs of these magazines.
Maybe he was hanging out too long with William Shatner.
Maybe. It was so weird, man. What happened, Elliot?
Well, I think it was a deliberate choice, though, because it was throughout the whole movie.
I will play a clip of him talking to Brenda Vaccaro, also a yeoman of work in the acting army.
You called and said it was something important. What is it?
Mrs. Brubaker, it may not be important to you. I'm looking for something that may be important to me. It's personal.
You're a reporter, aren't you?
Yes. As I told you, I'm not looking for an interview. I would like to ask you a few questions about the last time you spoke with your husband after the landing.
What about it?
Well, this may sound strange, Mrs. Brubaker. Please don't be upset with me. Just before the conversation ended, Colonel Brubaker said to you something about going on a vacation, and your reaction was, it was like you didn't understand what he was saying.
Why would you want to know about that?
As I told you, it's something personal.
It's personal to me, too.
Please, I'm not trying to embarrass you or anyone else.
Why would any of this be your business?
Please, trust me.
Why?
You ask really good questions.
Well, it's all so silly. It wasn't anything that dramatic. Brew just forgot something, that's all. I don't see the purpose in broadcasting that my husband made a mistake about a vacation when he had so many other things to think about.
No, I'm not looking for anything to broadcast.
What are you looking for?
It has to do with a friend of mine.
Is there something I should know?
If there was anything, I would tell you.
It's nothing. Bruce said that he wanted to go back to Yosemite like last year. Last year we went to Flat Rock, not Yosemite. I don't think there's any cosmic significance in that.
Mrs. Brubaker, I truly thank you. I'm sure you had better things to do than put up with a bunch of stupid questions.
No, I didn't. Have I been any help to you at all?
Well, I don't know. May I call you again sometime?
Yes.
It's so strange. It is just so strange. I don't understand it because everything else is okay for the most part. I mean, again, maybe he's just trying to be too cool for school. So here's where it gets a little bit tragic. So everything's going fine. I mean, the astronaut guys.
You're skipping right past the giant wild Mustang ride.
Well, okay. Yeah, sorry. Elliot Gould also ends up being somewhat threatened. Someone has managed to disable his brakes and make his
throttle stick
open. So he's screaming through the magic of
camera
fast
speed.
Winding and cameras. Yes.
Yeah, it was a little jarring to see that, especially because we're so spoiled with special effects nowadays. It was just kind of a throwback to the 70s. But I give him credit for being smart enough to drive into water.
Oh, yeah. No, he seemed to do a good job.
Yeah,
and there was a lot of traffic wherever he was driving. Was it they were in Houston or something?
I think so.
I don't even remember. But anyway, that scene, that Mustang scene where Elliot Gould is piloting this out of control Mustang through sped up camera, that was used in several TV shows. That exact, except for Elliot Gould, they just replaced him with the cutaways. They reused it on like the A-Team, and I want to say, I don't know, maybe it was a Streets of San Francisco or something, but it was like one of those other programs like, oh, yeah, we have this already. Why would we pay money to have somebody do block off roads and have this whole thing? Although in the 70s, maybe they didn't block off roads either, like they would have to do now for insurance reasons.
Yeah, but, well, you wouldn't be driving that fast in theory.
Well, it's true, but still. Anyway.
Yeah, no, I your point taken.
Yeah, so he has attempts on his life as well. So now we have the technician who has disappeared, and we have the suspicious reporter whose life is being threatened. But because he is not a very well-liked reporter by his boss, and what's this boss's name?
Anyone. He's not liked by nobody.
Nobody likes him. Yeah, that's true. Who's his boss? I didn't write it in my notes, but his boss is so fucking great. And he's also Johnny Handsome and everything. Not handsome. Sorry. He's
yeah, he was
Johnny
in,
Drama.
He's been in a ton of stuff, too. Yeah. He wasn't he on Charlie's Angels?
Yes, I think so.
I think he was the the main dude on Charlie's Angels.
Yeah, the stand-in for Bosley.
Yes, and I don't remember his name.
Or no, maybe he was Bosley.
I think he was Bosley.
Yes. I can't remember whether Bosley was supposed to be Charlie, just like Higgins ended up being Robin Masters. Spoiler. Anyway, that actor is great. And he has some of those crazy dialogue scenes that Elliot Gould can't pull off, but he can. He is having a great time. He is the anti-OJ. He is digging it. They manage to... Okay, the spacecraft hits Mars or whatever, and they fake the Mars planting the flag, all that stuff. And then they're back in route Earth, and they have to... there's a television appearance. Although, is the idea that they're close now so they can talk like one-on-one and like have a back and forth conversation at this point in their trip? Because remember, once they got further away from Earth, you couldn't have those kind of conversations. So I thought that was a little weird.
Actually, I made a note about that because it irked me so much. So an actual radio transmission between the Earth and Mars would take on average 13 minutes.
Yeah.
Now, that swings from 4 minutes to 24 minutes, depending on the respective rotations of the Earth.
The relative positions.
Right. Yeah. And the positions in their orbits, the planet's respective orbits. So, but still, at the very least, you have 4 minutes of delay, which is significant.
So at the very least, even if they were halfway home, they would still have 2 minutes of delay.
Yes.
Yeah. So they must have been super close. But anyway, I'll forgive that, because this is where James Brolin actually gives, even though he wants to, he's already told the guys, oh yeah, he's going to blow the whole cover. He's tired of this. He's not going to fake it anymore. And the other guy's like, this is bad. They can hurt our families and stuff. And he's like, "Hur." So instead of doing it overtly, he covertly gives a message to his wife, Brenda Vaccaro. By the way, all three of those guys look like they're being held hostage. Like, I don't know if the tape sent from space at that time, everybody was very rigid. But these guys looked super depressed, which I thought should have been a tip off anyway.
Yeah. By the way, David Doyle.
Yes,
David Doyle. He died in 97. He was in a ton of stuff. He did a lot of voice work in cartoons.
Oh, I bet. He had a very expressive voice.
Yeah. I mean, he has a huge amount.
How many citations?
117.
Yeah. Pretty good.
Rugrats. I'm just going to read the animated stuff because it amuses me. Rugrats, The Adventures of Pinocchio, Mighty Ducks. Let's see. The Quack Pack, Road Rovers. Derek would have gone crazy over that. Let's see, Bobby's World, Sonic the Hedgehog, Darkwing Duck, Archie to Riverdale and Back.
Who do you play in Archie?
Mr. Weatherby.
Ah, okay.
Makes perfect sense. He was on six different Love Boat episodes.
I'm sure.
That's funny. All his different characters. He was on several episodes of Fantasy Island.
I bet. Yeah. He was in our childhood.
Oh, yeah. He was in tons of stuff.
He and Robert Walden. Was he ever on Happy Days? He had to have been on Happy Days. It seems like he'd have that big Gary Marshall energy. The Vernon Shirley?
He was not on Happy Days, although people constantly mistook him for being Tom Bosley and constantly give him credit for it.
That's so funny. So now we have the message to the wife, broadcast worldwide or whatever. And she understands, because he basically says, tell the little boy that we'll go to that same place we went last summer here. And she kind of cocks her head just a tiny bit and says, okay. But she knows that they didn't go there. They went some other place.
By the way, she did the appropriate thing of not publicly shaming him.
Of course. Yeah.
And I don't mean that in some kind of misogynistic, women don't, you know, shouldn't shame their men. But just, I mean, just respectful in general, that you don't shame somebody for a mistake like that, considering the fact that, you
know. Of course not. Yeah. Not in public. Don't sell them down the river.
Right. So.
You know who does that? after you get divorced, your new younger girlfriend will do that to you.
The you not being me.
Not you, yeah. I mean, you meaning the listener. Sorry, Dougie, you have to get hurt in this.
I just wanted to make that distinction. didn't want somebody to suddenly think I'd gotten married to a woman.
Times are weird. 2020's been weird on everybody, man.
I can make an inappropriate comment, but I'm going to withhold for once.
So everything's going swimmingly, sort of. All this basically this Rube Goldberg plot is being held together just as tightly as they can.
Except that Elliot recognizes that the wife makes a crazy face as if, almost as if something wasn't right.
Yeah, but he makes the realization because of what happens next, which is on re-entry, where they're going to have this whole thing where they go slightly off course and go to this other place so they can get the guys on there. During re-entry, the heat shield separates and the entire thing burns up in the atmosphere. Which, by the way, did somebody at the secret desert thing have to pull the telemetry on those guys? Is that what they did? Because obviously the like heart monitors and stuff, that had to have been on the crew.
Well, they said that they recorded all of that from previous.
Oh, I see. Okay. So they recorded like a flat line, or well, did they just shut it down?
I imagine they just shut it off.
Maybe it was on board. So they was playing it on board.
Right.
Ah, okay. There you go. There's my technical criticism is over.
That's what I got from it, is that they had pre-recorded everything and they were just all on playback. So that way.
And the only thing they couldn't play back is those personal messages and the landing.
The actual interaction. Yeah. Yes.
Well, as soon as that happens, because they were en route to go meet with the aircraft carrier, so they were all good to go until suddenly, and they were listening live to all this thing, and then they realized what happened. So like, oh shit, we can't be alive. we can't just show up at a grocery store now. So they know their days are numbered. So they steal an airplane. It yeah. has no fuel.
Yeah. That. So pilot 101, didn't check there was no fuel.
Well, granted, they were had a strict deadline. Huh. So, yeah, they get in there, they get into the jet, they fly away, and then they have to land in the desert, sort of crash land in the desert.
It goes to that joke that I always see online, where there's a woman sitting in a plane seat and the stewardess is bending over her and she's asking the flight attendant or in-air customer service representative, how often do planes crash? And the flight attendant says, oh, just the once.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, they managed to have this landing in the desert. By the way, I think I was interrupting you a lot, which is my way. I know you guys mocked me about that last week's episode, which is fine. It's deserved. The opening, where it was sort of slow, I think they were doing the lingering over the NASA spacecraft, kind of like Star Trek 1 did the lingering over the Enterprise. I mean, it was probably pretty cool to see in the theaters.
Yeah, imagine.
Yeah.
I imagine this looked very good at the time in the theaters.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, they didn't have any special effects. It all had to be either in camera, like the car chases, or, you know, like matte painting and stuff that we love.
We are so spoiled nowadays.
Oh, we are.
I mean, yeah. when you watch stuff like this, it does make you appreciate how much work had to have gone into the making, just the physical mechanics.
Yeah, and stunt people got hurt doing that kind of stuff. Jumping the car off of the bridge into the water and everything.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Crop dusting means something very different nowadays.
Pervert. That's why. So, and that was also weird. That when we get to Telly Savalas, that was just a whole weird
deal. That was from a different movie.
It was, but it was fun.
A Disney movie almost.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
It was just so discordant.
Yeah, so we have, they are basically on the run because they know NASA's going to come and get them. So we have the old style sort of Vietnam era helicopters that are coming after them. And with the men, it was black helicopters, the men and the machine guns. Gonna gun them down. They each of them figure, okay, we were traveling east, so we're gonna go off Brew will continue east and then you go north and you go south. They came from the west, so
it's kind of they can't get all three of us if all three of us are going different directions.
Yeah, and they each have one flare.
Kind of like the, you know, what we did as kids. We figured, you know, we just scattered like cockroaches. The parents could only catch one of us.
Exactly. Yeah. So, of course, you know, one by one, you know, we have this horrible death of O.J. Simpson, and we have a horrible death of Sam Waterston, and we have, but we have Brubaker end up, he ends up finding like an old, either abandoned or just sort of shut down gas station and breaks in.
Well, this is after, though, he does that horrific snake consuming.
Yes, yes. Actually, he had to hide in a cave.
Which was, it was bad.
The special effect was that he was eating raw fish that was stuffed inside the snake. I don't know why that made it better.
Yeah, why would they put raw fish? Why wouldn't they just put...
Because they needed to look meaty.
Okay, I
don't know either.
I don't care. I had a hard time though with James Brolin because I kept interpolating him and Josh Brolin.
Exactly. Yes.
Because they clearly look a lot alike. So.
Oh yeah, they were. Hey, man, James Brolin was a stud. It's no wonder.
Hotel Connie Selica, man, such a strange show.
Well, yeah. I mean, also by the way, rattlesnakes. And quicksand are also 1970s things. You don't really see them much anymore either.
No, you're right. Quicksand, you know, it's something I have never encountered in my whole life, except that there are mud flats in Alaska.
Yeah, yeah. So. There's definitely, yeah, you could die in the mud around our hometown. But yeah, not quite like quicksand. By the way, and while Brew is running for his life, we have Elliot Gould who goes and interviews Brenda Vaccaro. Even though she's been under guard, because you know the widows have to come out and make statements and stuff, and be interviewed, and it's like, oh, that would be horrible.
Yeah.
So this crazy reporter, like this is almost like a Kolchak level reporter, except that Darren McGavin was much more charismatic than Elliot Gould was in this movie. Yeah. So weird.
But when Bruce stumbles across that gas station. It is the most abandoned servicing gas station I've ever seen.
Okay, but you realize what I thought of when I saw that whole thing? It's like, oh yeah, this is just Fallout New Vegas. I expected to see some rad scorpions, you know, who were going to come and make my life a bit more difficult.
That's pretty funny. It was odd that there's this sudden filling station in the middle of nowhere, and there's nobody there, but there's lots of stuff there. In fact, everything's open.
Well, he has to break into the cash register.
Kind of, but...
Break into the Coke
machine. The garage doors are up.
Why didn't he drink the Coke in the Coke machine? Was there no Coke in there?
I don't know.
Payphones. Crazy.
Payphones, by the way, people, are these things that used to be ever-present on the streets where you would actually put coins into because they were telephones on a pole. And you would actually call people because you didn't have the technology of a phone in your pocket.
And people had maybe two phones in their house on the same line, but not more than that. And usually you had one phone in the kitchen with a real long handset cord.
Yep. And a ringer with an actual physical mechanical bell that would wake the dead.
By the way, people were losing their shit over pictures from your town today, even though I think the pictures were taken a couple months ago. About the post office picking up the post boxes.
In Portland?
Yeah. Yeah, because of course the postal service is under threat by the president directly. You know, I haven't seen a mailbox in the longest time. There are very few of them. I think it's more terrorist related than anything.
Yeah, I mean, there's one across the street from my house that I drive by every day.
Like a blue box?
Mm-hmm.
Ah, well, see if it still stays there.
Well, no, but here's the thing. Oregon's always been vote by mail. And now... It's free postage. We don't even have to put a stamp on it.
Wow. Cool.
So when I get my ballot, by the way, I'll have my ballot probably 5 to 6 weeks before the election. I will be mailing that thing. I will not be mailing it in. And I will tell you the reason why is because the county has drop boxes everywhere.
Exactly. Yeah.
Every library, although they're not open, but I don't know. Every library has a drop box for ballots. Also, the clinic that I work at right now has an election center in part of it.
Oh, perfect.
And they have a drop box, so I just have to go to work and drop it off. Yeah. So I'm not even going to waste the postage. And on election day, you can actually drive up to election center and drop your ballot off into the Election Central drop box. They have people there and everything. So Oregon will be fine. The rural areas, but the rural areas almost never decide what happens in Oregon. So there are as many people more, actually, that live in the Portland metro area than the rest of the state. So whatever Portland wants, Oregon gets, with there are some exceptions, but that's pretty rare because Portland's pretty hippie, liberal, left wing.
I'm going to swerve back into the movie here just because we could talk for hours about politics right now, but we probably shouldn't. So although it's funny, we could go back. Remember we were talking about Democratic candidates back when there were 20 of them? interesting to see how that all shook out. Maybe we can talk about that at some point. But anyway, so to finish up this movie, because we don't have really much left of it. So the reporter, Elliot Gould, goes, he hears about this abandoned base, blah, blah. He's figured out that
well, it's that whole exposition where he goes to the vacation site where they actually.
Yes. Which is a film set town.
And they shoot at him. Why?
Well, that's the other thing. Who was shooting at him, and why didn't they shoot again? You get one shot, and then you're done?
Ostensibly, you would hire somebody who could actually hit something.
Well, and he's alone in the desert. They should be able to shoot as many times as they want at him, right?
Exactly. What were they? And because scaring him clearly doesn't work.
No. So anyway, yeah. So he goes to the deserted movie set.
This is after he gets arrested, right? They arrest him for the fake drugs.
Yes,
boss has to bail him out.
Exactly. So actually his boss wanted him to drive. He went to his boss, Danny Doyle, was that his name? Mm-hmm. Saying, "Hey, I've got this scoop. This is weird. This is a conspiracy." And his boss is like, "I don't hear your crap stuff. You got to go to like Arkansas for the election or something. You know, get on a plane."
David, not Danny.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, this is the part of the movie where you give me 48 hours to come up with something. He goes, no, this is the part of the movie where I give you 24 hours. And if you don't find anything, you're either going to be to Arkansas or you're going to be out of a job. So he goes and pokes around. And yeah, he ends up getting raided by the police, who find a gigantic vial of cocaine in his medicine cabinet, which, by the way, was very empty just a moment before.
There was only scope in it before.
Very convenient, set decoration there.
Well, on top of that, the cop smells it and tastes it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Very 70s movie stuff. So, yeah, he ends up being taken down for possession of cocaine, and his boss has to bail him out and does so with great glee.
Well, hello there, Caulfield. So nice to see you. It's at this point that Alan Hill says to Richard Conte.
Jimmy Stewart.
Oh, yeah, Jimmy Stewart, thank you. Look, Scoop, I can't keep bailing you out of trouble. The front office is on my neck. I don't know how much longer I can keep them off, right?
Right.
Wrong. I got you out of there so as not to embarrass the network. I mean, you are a schmuck. I can't trust you to cover a fire. You'd probably fall down and get burned. You probably would be the cause of it. A company car. You're fired. Oh, I love how that sounds. I love that so much, I'm going to say it again. You're fired. You're through. Oh, I love it.
It's not what it looks like, really.
Frankly, Scarlett, I don't give a damn.
But because Elliot Gould's such a good reporter, he's going to track down this whole thing about where you can film a movie and where could you film it. You can film it at a deserted army base. Karen Black helps him out. She's the one who talks about the army base, and that's where he takes her car, the Datsun,
and money from her,
and promised to jump each other when he got back.
She's probably making it up, but
so he ends up going and renting or hiring a crop duster, and that's where we meet Telly Savalas. He was probably having a great time. I mean, for sure.
Morning.
You in charge here? See that sign there?
Yes.
Well, read it.
I did.
Out loud.
A&A Crop Dusting Service.
You want to know who I am?
I bet you're one of the A's.
But which one? I bet you can't answer that question, smartass.
First one.
Wrong!
Can I have one more guess?
You got it.
The second one.
Wrong. I'm both of them. A&A. My name is Al Bain. Now, I got a son. You know, the other A was for him. But he don't like to fly. He became a lawyer. I think he's a pervert, so I took the A away from him. You want to speak to somebody in charge? You speak to both of them.
My name is Caulfield.
Hey, I can't help that.
Mr. Albane, how much do you charge to dust the field?
$25.
I'd like to hire your plane.
That'd be $100.
You said you charged $25.
$25 to dust a field, but you ain't got no field because you ain't no farmer, which means you ain't poor, and I think you're a pervert.
Okay, $100.
$125.
What?
Because you said yes to $100 too quick, which means you can afford $125.
This was a different movie, though. This was an entirely different movie. It really was like a Disney family movie.
Yeah.
Where you want to hire a crop duster, and then we're going to go and do all this crazy stuff.
You're right. It could have been, it could have easily have been Harvey Korman or Tim Conway or Harvey Korman. Yeah.
I think they're both dead, aren't they?
I think so. Yes.
Now I have to look. I know Harvey Korman died, but
yeah, I think Tim Conway has also passed. Maybe not. Pour one out for Dorf.
Yeah, he died last year. Yeah. Conway did. Harvey Korman died a while ago, though, right? Every time I think of Harvey Korman, I just think of High Anxiety.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Harvey Korman died in 2008.
Oh, okay, yeah. Anyway, so we have this Yakety Sax crop dusting thing. And they end up finding Brew right as the two helicopter are going to. By the way, I love the way the helicopters turn and like as
look
if they are.
Other.
Yeah, they look at each other like it's the Cars movie.
Yeah, that really grated on me.
And they were flying so close together, unless that was like an optical illusion.
I'm sure it was meant that way, but I thought the same thing. I thought, are they trying to make it look like they're going to run into each other? Because it just made me, I don't know.
I think they reused the helicopter stunt also in other things.
That would not surprise me at all because it looks familiar.
Yeah. It's great. It's like the Wilhelm scream, right? I mean, just throw it in there.
The Wilhelm scream. It's good catch.
Thank you. Yeah. So at the end, we have the very small memorial for the astronauts. I mean, there's like, what, maybe 150 people there?
Oh, wait. So did you just completely bypass the helicopter bi-wing crop dusting plane scene?
Well, I did gloss over it. It's
okay.
Basically,
the ridiculousness of him being able to, by the way, having not had food or water except for the snake and walking through the desert, but he can hold on to the guide wires on the wing. As
oh,
they
yeah.
do barrel rolls.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
This was totally a Disney movie. It's ridiculous.
It was a plane versus helicopter chase.
Up until the explosions, it was a Disney movie.
Mm-hmm.
And Telly Savalas, why? What was he hot at the time? He just seems like such a...
Yeah, he's probably hot off of Kojak, right?
I'm going to look. Sorry.
Oh, and when did he play Blofeld, right? He was in a Bond movie, for God's sakes. He was a Bond villain. Telly Savalas was a stone cold stud at the time.
And he was Blofeld in 69.
Okay. So it was a long time after Blofeld.
And then he just had a lot of one-offs, it looks like. Looks like movies, bad movies. Windows, Doors, and Keyholes. It just seems like an odd choice. It was.
It's weird. This totally. Whole, I mean, all of the cast is weird. Because you think Elliot Gould would have been a big star.
Hal Holbrook was probably a draw, I'm guessing, maybe.
Yeah.
He was kind of draw people in. Because at that time, Sim Waterston wasn't that popular, was he?
No, but O.J. Simpson was a draw.
Because he was, I suppose.
Yeah, no, he was. He's a famous guy.
I'm not
denying. And he was representative as a person of color in a movie in the 70s. And he was not the bad guy. Or a panderer. Or druggie or anything. He's a goddamn American hero. That's that guy.
The American who died on the line.
He did, yeah. By the way, even Howard Cosell thought the Juice was really super personable guy. Howard Cosell didn't think he made a good broadcaster either because he couldn't speak. But I'm not here to throw stones at that because I, even though professionally, turns out I kind of am a broadcaster in a certain way, yet I would not be probably held in high esteem if I were to be on a movie set.
Well, I think it depends on what kind of movie. I think you're setting your sights too low.
Okay, well, we'll see. So anyway, after this helicopter plane chase, a slightly disheveled Brubaker and the reporter Elliot Gould jog into the memorial service. Again, a very small memorial service.
As if Secret Service would have allowed any of that to happen.
They would have sniped them right from the very beginning, yes.
Before they ever got into the funeral, just in the graveyard alone.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
no, come on. At that point, we had had several attempted presidential assassinations. Security was probably a little tighter than that. Well, one notable successful one, but lots of them in the 70s, the whole Squeaky Fromm and we're years away from.
But then the slow-mo at the end, that was unnecessary.
That was the Breakfast Club fist pump freeze frame at the end. I think they did freeze frame, didn't they?
They did.
Yes. And then they play the music again.
Yes, the piano. I wrote 1977 and the piano ending. So period.
These three men reminded us of the limitlessness of our hopes. There was a moment these past few days when we were all one people. We were all hoping. We were all a little bit taller, a little bit prouder. We were all feeling the same fears and the same exhilaration. These three men brought us together. We knew together that there are no goals we cannot reach if we just reach for them together. There is no adequate way in which we can express our gratitude to the men themselves because they are no longer among us. However, we can serve their memory, what they stood for.
Great. I love it. I love it. Anyway, so you didn't like this. What would you give it? Like, right now...
I'm going to give it a C.
Okay.
It was a campy movie. It was fine to watch. I mean, I was entertained, I guess. I took notes on my phone because I didn't want to be bothered to actually write something down. So that was my level of effort. I'm like, yeah, this wasn't terrible. I think had I seen it in 77, it would have been very different. But watching it today, it was entertaining. It was weird to see, O.J. Simpson.
Yeah. With his five head.
He didn't speak almost at all.
No.
As if he had no talent to act. So.
Yeah. Or he wasn't allowed to just give free rein. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, maybe he knew also he was being shoehorned in there. And I mean, maybe it was uncomfortable for him, too, actually.
Maybe. I mean.
Yeah. He must have had a lot of pent-up frustration by the 90s. Anyway. So, again, I think I like this movie and a lot of, like, the Parallax View, of course, and the other big conspiracy movies. I like them in the same way I kind of like H.P. Lovecraft stories because that's kind of a big cosmic conspiracy also, or like lots of horror movies where the idea of it is great. The idea of it is actually more entertaining than the actual execution of it. But I like the idea so much that I enjoyed the execution of it.
The high concept of it is great.
Yeah. I love the premise. Yeah.
Yeah.
But now, here's where I want to just briefly, probably, we don't have to belabor it, but, we live in 2020, and we live in a post-truth government world. I guess I was trying to think about how I was going to explain this, but, you know, so I grew up in the 70s, so I learned to have just an innate distrust of the government, parents being sort of hippies, well, at least one of them.
I think they were both hippies at one point.
I think so.
They both drifted different directions.
So I grew up in the 70s, distrust the government. I grew up in the 80s, so distrust corporations. You know, I grew up in the 90s, so you distrust everybody. Although it turns out the 90s were maybe the halcyon period of... I did not appreciate the calmness of the 90s compared to what was to come, because then you have 9/11, and then you've got all this...
For God's sakes, we didn't appreciate the calmness of the Bush administration, W.
Oh, yeah. Well, comparatively, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, war criminal, sure. You know, never-ending war, yeah, that started. 9/11, not great. It wasn't his fault, but not great.
Yeah.
Katrina, that spawned Kanye West running for president, by the way. That's the whole thing. But yeah, now we live in where truth is up for grabs. You just have to scream loudest. You don't have to worry about a secret conspiracy. It's just all out in front of us. Again, there's no subtext. There's just text. Yes.
Yeah.
I fired him because he was investigating me. I'm going to shut down the post office unless the Democrats cave. You know, it's just, there's no
shame.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah.
No, he doesn't. Yes. Our administration is led at the top by someone who has no shame or regard for the truth, has lied to get ahead consistently most of his life. And since it works, why would you change gears? So.
Guess what my wife bought me?
I don't know. That was an O face. Oh, they're back.
Yeah.
Do you like Necco wafers?
I do like Necco wafers. I mean, they're not the greatest, but they do have sort of a sentimental appeal.
They scratch a nostalgic itch.
Yeah.
You know the Valentine's Day candy hearts are made by the same people, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, it's sort of the Taco Bell factory. Only have three ingredients, and they just change the shape of everything.
Yeah, the pastels.
Yeah. By the way, I didn't know until I heard Jason Mantzoukas, I think, on a podcast in the last 3 or 4 years that Necco actually means something.
Oh?
It's like the New England candy company.
Oh, well, kind of like Nabisco.
Yeah.
National Biscuit Company.
Oh, okay. There we go. I was going to say Nebraska. I don't know.
although Nabisco is now mostly, I think... produced in Mexico by Mondelez.
Yeah, Mondelez owns everything, right?
Yeah, exactly. So.
Yeah, except they, because for a while it was like, wasn't Nabisco also, didn't they like own or were owned by like RGR Reynolds, like tobacco company?
I think so.
Yeah.
And I had a coworker whose husband worked at the local Nabisco plant and would talk about that you should never, ever eat the fat-free Oreos. Ever. Because... The filling extruder that they had, the filling would eat the rubber gaskets out of it every shift.
Oh, that's funny.
Like, ooh, gross.
Again, that's why I should have learned from you not to eat movie popcorn, because they melted your shoes.
Oh, I love movie popcorn.
Oh, me too.
That's what I make to this day.
So I guess I don't really necessarily need to talk about conspiracy theories, because I guess I love the idea of conspiracy theories, but I don't believe in any, because God knows, like, things like QAnon and stuff really kind of piss me off. And I'm not going to say there's good people on both sides, but what I am going to say is, you know, it's not like it's just the Republican Party that's to blame for this whole thing. It's not like they're the only ones that have dirty hands in this thing. There are plenty of things that happen right now that are unacceptable on both sides.
Yeah.
However, there was a time in our lifetime where people used to at least pretend that this was an organized, calm leadership, and there were decisions made for the good of the country and not just individual
wealth holders,
donors. Yeah.
Yeah.
Special interest groups.
Yep. I like conspiracy theory movies too. You know, Pelican Brief.
Yeah.
All the President's Men is a huge conspiracy movie.
It's one of the central 1970s conspiracy movies.
Yeah. Which is in my top 10 list. So I think it's in my top 10 list. It's in there somewhere. Top 20, top 10. I don't remember.
It's your list of judgment for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I'm too old to remember. I wrote it down. I just like, huh. I got too much in my head, so I don't know. But no, I like a good conspiracy theory movie too. I don't subscribe to any crazy, nutty, nutty to me. I guess I should be careful. I don't subscribe to any what seem to be nutty to me conspiracy theories. I don't, you know, I believe we landed on the moon. I believe the Harvey Oswald killed Kennedy.
Seems reasonable. Sirhan Sirhan killed his brother.
In the absence of credible evidence to the contrary, I believe what I've seen and what I've heard and what I've been able to, you know, research and whatnot. So I think the internet and Facebook and things of that ilk have led a lot to the degradation of any kind of journalistic integrity. What people call journalism now, which isn't, and there isn't much, there isn't a whole lot of emphasis on fact checking because it's not about facts anymore. It's about entertainment and ratings.
As soon as it was the major networks just using each other as sources, that was a problem. But you know, all the media changed. I mean, back in the day, you know, you could have newspapers. So there were newspapers. That was just like the primary way to get news. And then it turned into TV, and then you got 24-hour TV, and that changes kind of everything. And the internet then changed all that as well. And so suddenly you have, you know, everybody can be a reporter. Everybody can be a journalist. You could, you know, people would with disdain would say bloggers or whatever, right? But there are plenty of bloggers, you know, like still a news aggregator like Matt Drudge.
Yeah.
You know, he gets billions of hits.
And again, journalists and reporters are different.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And we don't have a lot of reporters anymore.
All these things we thought were rules were merely suggestions. We're just...
Well, the consolidation of all the big media corps also. So you have a big megacorp that controls media.
Well, and when there used to be at least a paper wall, right, between news and entertainment or news and advertising.
Editorial now it's all and together. Non-editorial comment.
Yeah, it's all together now. It's all, you know, you can get prepackaged news stories that are just ads.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when's the right time to change your smoke detector? Well, they have new smoke detectors now, like this one from First Safety or whatever, that you only have to replace the batteries every 10 years.
Yeah.
And you can package that up as news and sell it as a commercial. So it's, I don't know. So, but yeah, I think...
I assume we're done talking about the movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
I give it a thumbs up. I thought it was fun. It had just the right amount of cheese.
I don't think it was supposed to be a cheesy movie. That's the thing. I think that's the problem.
It depends on who you're looking at. I think Elliot Gould was in a weird cheesy movie, and I think Telly Savalas was in a wacky Disney movie. You're right. And like again, David Doyle was in a great Disney movie. Not even a bad Disney movie, a great Disney movie.
Yeah.
I want to watch the Apple Dumpling Gang again and see if it actually holds up. It probably doesn't, but I do want to see if it holds up.
I'm really cautious about all those movies from my childhood, that genre, because I don't want them spoiled, but I do have that itchy curiosity, like maybe, but then I remind myself how much shit is actually in my Netflix queue.
And I'm
like,
well, yeah.
Ew. Oh my god, I gotta have to keep going. But what am I watching right now? Alias.
Oh yeah, see, that's fun.
Yeah.
Again, it's the New England Candy Company type of show. It's just a confection. But it will dissolve in your mouth and be slightly dusty, but it'll satisfy you.
The first episode of Alias I watched, I realized, I thought, oh boy, it's gonna be rough for a while. Because Alias by J.J. Abrams.
Oh, yeah. Lens flare. She had that great red wig, maybe? Or was it a blue wig? Red wig. Yeah.
Red.
Which was all over the ads. I thought, oh, she's going to be in a red wig every week.
I'm sure that was very titillating at the time.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Anyway, so to talk about other television, by the way, did you see that there's going to be a miniseries on HBO? I don't know if it'll get more than one season, but it's got one season now. Lovecraft Country.
Yeah, Actually, I think I have the book. Either I have the book on Audible or it's in my wish list, but I haven't read it yet.
So just to warn you, the executive producers, Jordan Peele, good.
Yeah.
J.J. Abrams.
Well, you know, I mean, I like a lot of what Bad Robot stuff, right? That his company. Yeah.
I have no commentary. That was my list.
And it's right up Jordan Peele's alley too, because it's horror, which he likes, and it's also, it deals with the Jim Crow laws. I mean, and then there's Lovecraft elements in it, but, yeah. So it's, you know, I didn't watch, the Watchmen series, but I understand that was really good too. And that dealt with like the Tulsa, race murders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, sort of topical.
Yeah, I will go back at some point, but right now in this environment, I
know, it's tough.
Living in Portland on top of it, I just can't. By the way, there are no riots in Portland. So
yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, I asked, I don't know if she's a listener, but Jocelyn in Chicago, who I know from online, you know, she's lived in Chicago this whole time. And so I sent her a message like, you know, like I want to ask her what it's like on the ground, you know, in Chicago. Because they just had that looting incident recently. And of course it's like murdered city, whatever, all the time. And she's like, well, I'm not really on the ground because, you know, like, you know, I live in the north side, so I don't really go into the city very often. I don't go to the south side, you know, very often either. So, you know, I know where I live, you know, but I can tell you what I can tell you. I said, well, I don't actually even know enough to ask the right questions because I can't wrap my head around a city of almost 9 million people and a police department of 12,000 patrol officers. That kind of warps my brain. You know, it's just a different world than I happen to live in.
Yeah. Now that the governor got the DHS to leave or talk about leaving, then things have calmed down-ish. We're still having nightly protests, but once the DHS left, it's funny how everything de-escalated and people stopped having all these massive violent incidents and exchanges with law enforcement. So, by the way, one city block.
Yeah, it's the federal courthouse, right?
One block. Yes, it's the federal courthouse. One block. When you watch it on TV, they would make it look like it was all of Beirut, but it wasn't. It's a one block. So,
no, I just assumed it was Black Hawk Down, right?
90% of Portland is unaffected. And I say 90%, and probably more like 99.9% of Portland. I mean, such an infinitesimally small part of Portland. Also, it's a terrible building anyway. So, you know, I'm not advocating anything bad happened to it.
And you know what? I mean, the, you know, federal agents are tasked to protect federal property, which the federal courthouse is. But you're right. It depends. Tactics are an interesting thing.
Yeah. And it is, the federal courts are necessary, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Turns out. Anyway, do we want to end this and just chit-chat? And,
no, I have a couple stories, a couple housekeeping. So, today was a stressful day. It's been a stressful week. I had a full-blown panic attack last night for the first time. It's been years, which resulted in me having to take a Valium to just calm down, which was, by the way, the Valium barely took the edge off. Bastard. Yeah,
by the way, if anybody has, if you have not had a panic attack, you don't want to have one. It's not fun.
Anyway, it was not good. And I was home alone, which I think was probably better when it started. I was home alone, so I think I was actually better because then I wasn't having to worry about somebody calling an ambulance or, you know, I didn't have to worry about any of that. Because I knew enough to know I was having a panic attack. I couldn't stop it.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about panic attacks is part of it, at least for me, part of it was like the embarrassment and the, you know, oh, come on, like suck it up. Feeling that you have while you're having it.
Well, and like 5 minutes in, I knew, I'm like, oh shit. Like, okay. Yeah. I just have to
Got to ride this one out.
Got to do it. Got to go forward. Like, just, you know, don't do stupid things. Don't, but it's like, so I started like just kind of insulating myself because I knew it was going to spiral. So anyway, so I had an appointment at the DMV today to get an updated driver's license because two reasons. Mine's going to expire in a couple months. Potentially I'll be traveling in a couple months, maybe. But I needed to get a new license. I wanted to do that long before I needed to travel, also because it's going to be the real ID. So all of that is going to take extra time. So I had an appointment.
For those outside of America, real ID is and then like a much bigger process than getting a driver's license. It's basically like a passport to go within states now.
Yeah. I had to show all kinds of paperwork, which is fine. I had it, but I actually took way more documents than I needed just because, again, I was worried that because the DMV, you had to make an appointment and you go in and they're only letting people with appointments in. And I was worried I would have to leave and make another appointment. And so I'm like, nope. So I just took like I had a whole stack full of papers and he's like, well, I don't need that, but I need this. He goes, you have a passport. Just give me that. And so that took like half of the paperwork away. So at any rate. But on top of that, then the landlords are looking at getting rid of the house. And so they were going to come over and just do a house inspection today, which was stressful enough because then it's a lot of like, do I want to clean a whole lot or do I not care? I mean, if they're going to sell the house, do I care if I want to buy the house? Do I want to make the house look better? Because that's to my detriment. So there's all these things going through my head. And of course, I cleaned anyway because it's going to have to get cleaned one way or another.
For company.
Yeah, so and strangers in my house. So, I mean, I guess not strangers, the landlords. But then it turned into the landlords and a realtor. And then today, an hour before they were going to show up, a realtor, a landscaper, a painter, and a general contractor on top of the landlords. So I'm sitting in my living room trying not to have another panic attack because now there's going to be potentially a whole bunch of people in my house. I don't know if they're going to have masks. I don't know what they're – I mean, there's so many vectors that instantly I was starting to – I was truly going to panic. So I just texted the landlord. I said, I need names and phone numbers of everybody who's going to be here today because if something happens, I need to be able to let
– contact trace.
Yeah, the contact tracing vector control people know. Because I'm not going to know any of these people. You know, the landlords I know, I got their numbers. But, like, I need the other. And so that was its own kind of stress. So and they came over and it was a couple hours and it was fine. I don't know what's going to happen. But I felt very ambushed because when I was told before, it was just going to be the landlords and a realtor and I was fine. And but then, like, today, not long before – it just felt it felt like an ambush. I wish I would have been told up front and then I wouldn't. I don't know. It would have at least I don't know if I would have felt any better, but it wouldn't have escalated me into today where I was probably in low Earth orbit. So it's very stressful. But on top of that, which is why I bring this up, my experience at the DMV was actually pretty good. I'm not thrilled with my new picture, but you know, I've never been thrilled with my DMV picture. But Jesse says it looks really good and it will look good in color. He thinks the black and white just makes me look different. I don't know. So hopefully he's got better judgment than I do in that and that my license doesn't make me look like a circus child molester. So, this is super funny. So on top of all of this, in the midst of all of everything, the maelstrom, you know, I still get mail for Derek. And depending on what it looks like, I'm either just immediately sending it back deceased or I'm opening it to look at it. And then I'm contacting people and saying, you can't get blood out of a turnip and there's nothing here. So so I got some weird asset recovery thing today. And I thought, oh, I'll just open it and call these people. Because what happens then is they either call the house, they start calling the house, or they come to the house. Neither of which I'm really like, I don't need the stress. So, I open up this asset thing. So about 4 or 5 years ago, Derek sold a car to one of those car charity places to get rid of a car.
Yeah. Cars for 1-800 cars for kids or whatever.
I don't know what it was. Whatever.
Something similar to that.
Yeah. but never put the paperwork in to sell the car.
Mm.
So fast forward to June of last year when somebody got the car, maybe, I don't know, at an auction or something, and then drove it, and then it got impounded, towed and impounded, and has been in a tow and impounding yard so long it got then auctioned off again. So there's this bill for the towing and impounding fees, and so it's like over $1,000, and I had to laugh because I thought, yeah. Well, too bad for you people. So
exactly.
I thought it's so Derek. If he had been alive for this, he would have absolutely just, he would be apoplectic with rage. So it made me chuckle a little bit because I could already theorize what the events would have been. And so now I'm like, so I just called them today and just said, you can keep sending me notes and you can call and you can come by, but he's no longer with us. So, and they're like, well, where is he? I'm like, oh, sorry. He's dead. No longer with us means he's not on this plane of existence. Mm-hmm. And the guy was like, oh, well, just write that on the note and send it back to us. I'm like, okay. So there was that. But I texted Casey, one of Derek's sisters, and said, this is funny and annoying at the same time. And she said, it really is Derek, though, in a nutshell, where he knows the rules existed, but never thought the rules ever applied to him and didn't care about them. And that was his whole life philosophy. So it was a little chuckle for me today on top of the mayhem that was going on. And then I was also kind of relieved because apparently he did talk to the landlords about some things he's done to the house. So I don't feel bad about it. The postscript to all of that is it turns out, the moratorium in Portland for evictions includes no cause evictions.
Uh-huh.
So they can't give me an eviction notice anytime until the declaration of emergency is over.
Ah, and then they have so many days or whatever.
Give me 90 days notice.
Oh, that's good.
So, and Portland proper has a relocation expense clause. So they have to pay me $4,500 within 45 days of the eviction notice to relocate. Because I've been in this house for X number of years, and it's a 3-bedroom house ostensibly.
Those are liberal city rules, man.
Well, it's because we were having an eviction problem, and
I realize there's reasons for it, but
yeah. So I didn't think it included me, so I was just expecting to get an eviction notice and having to move anytime soon. But I don't know when the declaration is going to be over, so we'll see. If they declare the emergency proper is over next month, I was telling Jesse, I'm like, well, hopefully we make it another couple months under this declaration, because otherwise it means we're moving in December.
Yeah.
And that will send me over the edge.
Yep.
So Jesse's like, oh, I'll take care of it. I'm like, you taking care of it will not send me over the edge. I appreciate that you're going to do that for me, but that will not in any way quell my craving.
It just means when I crawl out from over the edge, then I'll see it's been done. And I'll be happy.
Yeah. So you can't, you can move the crazy to another room, but the crazy is not leaving the house. Like the crazy is the crazy. It's still going to be around. So,
You can't evict the crazy.
Yeah, no, really can't. So there was that. But hopefully, I think, and I'm not sure what they're going to do. I'm not sure what they've decided. So we'll see. They came and then they left. And so we'll.
All in all, it seems like it didn't go as badly as it could have.
Well, I don't know how bad it. I mean, I don't have any idea how it went. We'll see. I'm sure they were talking about what they would do if they kept the property, i.e. they would sell it to somebody else. And it turns out if they wanted to put multiple properties on it like they're doing with other places, they would actually have to knock the house. They would have to remove this house. The lot is situated in such a way that they couldn't just flag houses behind it as an ADU or something modified, because there isn't enough clearance on either side. There's not enough setback, as they call it. So that's one thing. So that makes it less likely that they're going to sell it to an investor off the bat, because right now I don't know there's going to be investors that are going to be wanting to build a lot of properties all of a sudden. But from their perspective, I think what they're going to do is they're going to crunch some numbers and see what they would have to put into the house to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would take that off of the purchase price and sell to me as is, less what they would have to put into it.
That would be nice.
Maybe. It depends on how realistic their numbers are.
Yeah, that's the thing.
So, you know, and plus I would still have to get a house inspection, a proper house inspection, because, you know, there were termites at some point, and there's a crack in the basement somewhere. And no bank's going to let me get a mortgage for less than it, you know, for more than the house is worth. So
yeah,
there's lots of factors. You know, and then there's the debate. Do I really want this house? Do I want to stay here? And
exactly. Maybe that doesn't fit into your 5-year plan or whatever.
Well, right now there's no,
yeah, there's no plan, right?
Yeah, I don't have a 5-year plan anymore because I can't plan anything. So, I don't know. Moving would be an expense and difficulty, and I've been looking at places and I've had exactly zero success. So,
yeah.
And I have been actively looking. So, I don't know what that's going to look like. So, that's a stress, but we'll see. We'll see what they will work with me and what I can afford. So really it'll come down to the market, and the market's wonky right now.
Well, you say, yeah, nobody knows anything about what's going to happen.
Well, right now the market's turning up for real estate here. So sales are happening again. But come October, you know,
and who knows what the interest rates are going to be doing too.
Well, and if we have a big another surge in October, is the real estate market going to tank again for a while? And then I would end up, you know, very upside down. So, real estate's a long-term investment, I guess. But
yeah, totally.
But still, it's one of those. Yeah, I don't know. So we're working on that. I'm not sure what's going to go on. I'll wait to see what they keep using tactics, I think, to try and get me to say how much I would go for. And I'm pretty much told them, like, give me your bottom line number. That is your true bottom line number. Cause this isn't, I don't want to play any games. Tell me what you want for it. Cause I'm going to have to go, you know, lie, cheat, and steal and beg. So I only want to do that once. So figure out what you're good with. And then I will figure out if that fits for me, but I don't want any negotiations.
Yes,
cut to the chase and save everybody the hassle and the money. Because it's not – ostensibly, we're going to end up at that place anyway. So
– hopefully, yeah.
And since, you know, you don't need to sell to me, you don't have to, you're not obligated to, there's no harm in you giving me a bottom line. Just give me a figure, because you can go sell to anybody else. So
– yep.
So I don't know. It's going to be interesting and stressful.
Yeah, well.
But
– well – just remember, you'll never be homeless. If you can make your way back here, there's 5 houses in Anchorage.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I would have to have a job, and I've been looking at jobs, and there aren't a lot of jobs right
turns
now.
Turns out you wouldn't. For a little bit.
Well, yeah, but then there's the whole health insurance thing, so... You know, that's a big factor. If I were 20 years old, it would be different. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the considerations you make. And so I don't know. We'll see. A lot of things are just spinning plates right now.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast. We're going to leave it right here.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast. We're going to leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric.